What's up, everybody? Welcome to this special edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Obviously, I've been a little bit under the weather. You haven't been seeing me too much. Been playing hurt a little bit, throat, dental surgery, and all of that stuff, but I'm here. And it's, you know what? God works in mysterious ways. He really, really does. Because what happens is that if I had been 100% healthy, I would have been on the air days ago cursing people out. Because this is the kind of stuff that gets on my damn nerves. You see, we're sitting up in here right now. It's a Tuesday, and, you know, I'm reading articles. Some small U.S. airports may have to shut down due to TSA absences, officials say. See, when we talk about Stephen A. Smith and we talk about, oh, you know what, running for office and all of this other stuff, this is where this stuff comes from. It's not because, oh, I'm some aficionado and I have all the answers or anything like that. It damn sure ain't because I'm interested in some politics, being a politician. It's because people need to get called out and cussed out and ultimately let go and replace. So the real adults in the room can come together and work to get things done. Because that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. You go to airports, you've seen lines, you've seen delays, there's still a partial shutdown, Department of Homeland Security, all of this other stuff that you're hearing about it. You're hearing about Democratic proposals, Republicans turning it down. You're hearing about Republican proposals, Democrats turning it down. And the American citizen is the one getting screwed. See, that's where somebody like me comes in. That's where somebody like me comes in. Because there's no way in hell that I'm going to sit idly by and take this kind of nonsense. This is the kind of stuff people need to get ticked off about. So from Reuters right here, some small U.S. airports may have to shut down due to a shortage of security screeners if a government funding impasse continues, a senior Donald Trump administration official said on Tuesday. The Department of Homeland Security said overall absences amongst Transportation Security Administration airport security officers was down 10.2% on Monday, close to the 10.1% who failed to show up for duty this past Sunday. So you got 10% of TSA workers that ain't showing up to work. And by the way, don't even think for 1 second to blame them. Don't even think for 1 second. How many of y'all working for free? How many of y'all working without having to worry about getting a damn check? How many of y'all are working when you know you're going to a job that doesn't afford you the luxury of being able to pay your bills when that's the damn reason you went to work to begin with? How many people are doing that? Let's understand about the significance of all of this. The absentee rate was higher at some major airports on Monday, including 30% at New York's JFK Airport, 37% at Atlanta's airport, 35% at Houston's Hobby Airport, and 39% at New Orleans. According to the Department of Homeland Security, some 50,000, I'm going to say it again, 50,000 TSA officers have been forced to work without pay for the last month due to the budget standoff. Typically, under 2% of TSA workers call in sick or do not report to work, according to the Department of Homeland Security. And oh, by the way, last point, 366 TSA officers have quit their jobs. So understand what that means. What that means is that there's going to be delays. What that also means is that security is compromised because the amount of people that you have doing the job no longer exist. So in an effort to expedite the process, to make sure that things are moving as fluidly as possible, who's to say there's not going to be some slip up somehow, some way, somewhere? This is why you've got people clamoring for leadership. This is why you've got people clamoring for stuff, for people that's going to get stuff done. And needless to say, right now, at this particular moment in time, we're not pointing fingers, we're pointing on both sides. Our government ain't getting it done. All of them ain't worth a damn at this particular moment in time. We already had a shutdown a few months ago where you got cats that was being furloughed. They were being laid off. They weren't getting paid, but the representatives, the elected officials on Capitol Hill were getting paid. They were getting their checks. They were keeping their health insurance. But somehow the American people that you're supposed to be serving doesn't get paid. And then you wonder why Stephen A. Smith, oh my goodness, somebody like him was rumored to be involved with all of this other stuff. And I wanted to get to that point too. Me and politics. Let me put this out on Front Street. I love how I show up on Sean Hannity's podcast and it's suddenly breaking news that, you know what, I'm not running for office. I have said nothing different than what I have said from day one. Leave the door open. You never know what God has planned, but I can't imagine I'm doing it because I ain't giving up my money. I've said that 1,000 times. I don't know why it was breaking news. I don't know why it was headline news. I don't know why everybody was walking around acting like I said something different than what I said in the past. I've been saying the same thing all the time. I ain't giving up my money. Now, what do I mean by that? That doesn't mean I run for president, I win the presidency, and I say, hell no, I'm going back to do First Take at Sirius XM. If that was the case, no, that would be a different animal. That's not what they're saying, according to the rules. You know, fairness over the airwaves and all of this other stuff. The second I announce that I'm running, that I'm trying to be a part of the process, that I want to be on that debate stage in 2027, which I unapologetically declare to you all I absolutely want to do, the second I do that, I got to give up my job. I have to be removed off the airwaves immediately. That is why I said what I said. If there is a way for me to be on that debate stage in 2027 while still keeping my check, I'll show up. Absolutely. But before anybody had a chance to truly comprehend what I was trying to say, I see my man Marcellus Wiley doing some interview, Vibe Magazine. Marcellus Wiley, quote, "I take it seriously. I know people with billions who support him, as in me, and have huge political pull. They're ready to back him if he chooses to go all the way. He can do it, and honestly, he's more qualified than some of the worst we've had. To get the popular vote, just to get the masses, to get an audience, you need to already have one built in. They don't even really know your character as much as they think they do. But it's the persona. It's the personality. It's all these things that add up to what they think your character is. So people rock with you. They feel they know you." Appreciate those sentiments from Marcellus Wiley. Kind of shocked that I heard it from him. Thank you very, very much. But it's very, very simple. Ladies and gentlemen, I've said this before. If I was a candidate for the presidency of the United States, it's not big up in me. It's an indictment against the people that exist in our system to begin with, because it's a damn joke. And this is the latest example of it. You got to be kidding me that we're going through what we're going through right now. Another shutdown, albeit partial. TSA not being financed. Other elements not being financed. People being without jobs. People not receiving checks. These folks on Capitol Hill still not getting things going. Now, I'm going to point the finger at the Republicans because, damn it, you're the ones in power. Figure out a way. You got the White House, you got the Senate, you got the House. What the hell are you doing? Always talking shit and never having a plan. I'm sick of it. Get it together. Where's your plan? You knew a shutdown was imminent before. You knew you were going to have resistance before. Where's your plan to address it accordingly, to make sure that the American people, a lot who voted for y'all, would be taken care of? How come that hasn't happened? And if you're the Democrats, you ain't much better. That's right, I said it. Ain't nobody gonna hide from it. The fact of the matter is that, look, the Democrats can make every proposal that they want to. If we're keeping it 100, let's call it what it is. When we got this whole stuff going on and now the SAFE Act comes into play yet again, most people don't have a problem with voter ID. Most people know that it wasn't Jim Crow 2.0, that was a bit excessive and that was engaging in hyperbole. But when you see some of the restrictions that the GOP have tried to put into these bills, and you see an individual like Senator Fetterman out of Pennsylvania even step back and say it's too invasive. It doesn't need to go that far. You need to replicate Florida law and what they were doing, because mail-in voting is still valuable. You don't need to eradicate that. Well, then that's a good argument that the Democrats have made. They could easily make that, but they haven't made too much noise about that. You know why? Because guess what? It's all right to get incendiary, because that's going to get folks riled up. And it's going to force folks to be more polarized than ever before, as opposed to coming together and doing what's in the best interest of the country. It's the same old BS, different day. Somehow, some way, it's got to stop. It really, really does, because we got bigger problems on our hands. And we can't sit up here and continue to tolerate this nonsense that ultimately affects the American consumer, the American voter. We have to stop. Somehow, some way, it has to happen. We got in, how many jobs have been lost because of these shutdowns? How many people's paychecks have been compromised because of these shutdowns? What's it going to take? See, this is why I sit here and I have these conversations about politics, given social commentary, and beyond. Because listen, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have the answers. I want the answers. I want to establish this as a platform where both sides can come and talk, not just politicians. I'm talking about pundits. I'm talking about commentators. I'm talking about podcasters. I'm talking about everybody. If you know how to act like you got some damn sense and you're willing to be an adult, you are welcome to come on this platform. Know how to act like you got some damn sense. Act like an adult, be an adult in the room, have something constructive and substantive to say. I'm all ears. I'm all ears. You know why? Because we need answers. We need answers. Not vitriol, not arrows pointing in one direction, not everybody acting like they are absolutely positively right and nobody else is right but them. That gets us nowhere. That gets us nowhere. I'm about to have my man Kevin Frazier on the show, talking about what transpired at the Oscars. Why? Because we had folks with anti-war sentiments up there. And they're not wrong with what they were saying in terms of wanting the war to end, not wanting the United States involved in a war in the Middle East, not wanting us at war with Iran, not wanting us to come to the aid of Israel at every single turn. That's them, not me. But people are entitled to feel that way. We got people, we're talking about different things, and people are bringing up stuff like growing anti-Semitism and stuff like that, where Fareed Zakaria comes on the show last week, and he addresses that. Why is that important? Because you might have a leader in Israel like Benjamin Netanyahu, who's known as a war hawk, that doesn't mind going after Iran, that had every intention of going after Iran himself. And because he was going to do it, there are people that believe he compelled Trump to do it, and Trump marched lockstep with him. And so they resent him. And as a result, they take it out on the entire Jewish community. Whereas you have others that believe it's the entire Jewish community. It's all over the place. Bantering, commentary, narratives, perspectives, every damn thing but answers. No answers. And now look what's happening. The president did tell us this wasn't a war. Then he's telling us it's going to go on for weeks. Then we're hearing subjects like, you know, Strait of Hormuz. I believe that's how it's pronounced. And now 20% of our oil goes through there. Not our oil, but the world's oil. And that has the potential, because of what's transpired between Iran and the United States and Israel, to compromise folks globally. You think that's not going to come back to bite us in the ass? You think that Iran bombing a hotel in Dubai and we don't even have American military base there, you think that's an accident? You think allies and proxies aren't going to be under attack? You think that this doesn't have the potential to escalate? And by the way, how much money is it costing us? I thought we were broke. I thought we needed to cut our fraud and spending and all of this other stuff. I thought we needed to mind our dollars. But somehow, some way, we find the money to spend on this. These are the kind of things that have to be addressed. But they have no shot at being addressed, ladies and gentlemen, if we're not willing to sit down and talk about it. I was looking, don't get uncomfortable. I'm sitting there listening to somebody like Megyn Kelly talk the other day about it. She talked about how she's against it. And she is a supporter of Trump. And her and other MAGA folks are against it. But her husband is for it. And everywhere we turn, we see people, family members, friends, and so on and so forth, for or against it. Because the devil's in the details. Considering Iran and its history, sponsoring terrorism, reportedly, considering their positions with the proxies, whether it was Hamas or Hezbollah or the Houthis in Yemen, and what role they played in financing these individuals. All of these kind of things are things that folks talk about. And as they talk about it, and we become even more heightened and aware, we become more alarmed and more scared. And I got news for you. Speaking just for myself. I don't like being scared when most of the time I'm flying 35, 40,000 feet in the air. I don't know about the rest of y'all, but I don't like it. Because you start getting scared about what can happen, if anything can happen. And I'm not alone. All of us are. And I just had that on my mind because I got my show coming on Wednesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124, Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith. And I just wanted to give some people insight into what's on my mind and what's going to be on my mind. And to reemphasize the importance of having conversations, being decent with one another, and disagreeing without being disagreeable. Stop being so damn volatile all the time. Let's work on capturing solutions. MAGA right, strong progressive left, don't like anything on the fringes. I'm a moderate. Because I believe in compromising and negotiating because I understand that everybody can't get everything they want. No one gets everything they want. Everybody has to sacrifice something. But in the end, we got to do it for the betterment of the country because ultimately we all in it together. And when I see Secretary of War, Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth sitting in front of the media, chiding folks, I want to throw up. Oh, it's because of your hatred for Trump. It's the Trump derangement syndrome. It's all this. Anything. Why? Because they're asking you questions about your job. They're asking questions about the president and whether or not he made the right decision. They're not celebrating the potency of our military. And instead, they're taking into account the kind of damage that engaging our military in military actions could ultimately bring back to American citizens here and abroad. We ask those questions and all of a sudden we're being unpatriotic. Who the hell is he? It's the typical fawning over the president of the United States with a bunch of people in administration kissing his you-know-what instead of respecting the fact that American citizens and American people have a right to ask questions that matter as opposed to marching lockstep and just inhaling anything that you say. You spit in our face and we say it's raining and that's what we're supposed to do all the damn time. That ain't the real world. That's not how it's supposed to work. Pete Hegseth may not know that because he's so happy to have his job that he's forgetting what comes with the job and that it's perfectly within bounds for an American citizen to question whether or not we're doing the right thing, especially if we're on the verge of potentially sending American soldiers to war. I just wanted to vent, let you know what was on my mind. And it reminds you that my unwillingness to be a politician doesn't mean I'm not willing to lead if called upon. I'm just telling you, I ain't giving up my career and my money on maybes. If I do something like that, it's going to be a sure thing. Otherwise, I'm going to sit right here or any place else that I'm sitting and raise holy hell. As far as I'm concerned, like most decent Americans would do in this day and age. A lot of those decent Americans, contrary to what y'all want to believe, was at the Oscars on Sunday night. They weren't there just to receive awards. A few of them had a few things to say. And I can't say I blame them. Doesn't mean it was all wise, though. But again, I can't blame them. But rather than me tell you where I stand on that, let me get an insider's perspective on this particular matter from somebody who knows it best. And who better to ask about that stuff than my man, my business partner here, one of my best friends on the planet, who happens to be the 12-time Emmy Award winner as host of Entertainment Tonight, covering Hollywood better than anybody in the business, the one and only Kevin Frazier. What's going on, big time? How are you?
What's going on with you? How are you?
Give it to me straight. Hollywood, they were not successful in ignoring politics, were they?
If you're in Hollywood, and especially at something like the Oscars, you can't ignore politics, because you have to remember something. At the Oscars, you're talking to an international community. I mean, one of the movies nominated for Best Picture, Sentimental Value, is a Norwegian film. They were dealing with that whole Greenland debacle in that area of Scandinavia for a long time. You know, there are movies from all over, including the Middle East, that are part of this ceremony. So you have an international body of people making cinema and making art, and they're all there for the Oscars.
What did you believe? What did you feel for Conan O'Brien's opening, his opening monologue, and how he handled everything? Let's start there first. How did you feel he handled everything?
Conan O'Brien is a brilliant writer, and I thought that he delivered a spot-on monologue. Look, that is part of what you do. You speak about what's happening in Hollywood, like the Timothée Chalamet issues, and you speak about what's going on in the world, like the things with the president right now. And I thought he was spot on. It was perfect for his audience. Everyone laughed. I don't think that, you know, it was malicious or harmful. I think he just made commentary on what's happening in the world. Great comedians make light of what's happening in the world, and that's exactly what he did.
What about Jimmy Kimmel?
Jimmy Kimmel has big balls. I'm going to tell you that right now. Because for him to step back up and take a pot shot at Donald Trump and the Melania documentary after what went on, because I was at Kimmel when all that stuff went down. And I want you to understand this, and I'm going to say this again so everybody gets it. What Jimmy Kimmel was worried about when all that happened, he wasn't worried about himself. He was worried about the people who worked for him. And he was concerned about all those people who would have been unemployed if that show had stopped at that point. So he was glad to get that show back on the air, but he ain't changed. He's being Jimmy Kimmel. He's being who he is. And the fact that the president goes tit for tat with him, that's on the president, honestly, to be honest with you, because in the past, no one would answer a comedian. But, you know, Kimmel speaks his mind, and it clearly gets under the skin of Donald Trump. And he has tried to eliminate him, put pressure on him to take him off the air. And there is Kimmel at the Oscars still standing 10 toes deep saying what he's got to say.
Who was responsible for the projected image on the side of the hotel by the Dolby Theater, where it was talking about getting ICE out of L.A. For immigration purposes, for immigration reasons?
Well, who knows? We don't know. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. But I will tell you this, that is a form of protest. Protest is allowed in this country. That's why that's how we have survived as a democracy for this long, because protest is allowed. And so it's interesting that people get so, you know, they're so bothered about protest. We've moved forward as a country because of protests and peaceful protests, not violent protests, not overturning things. But remember how this country started, right? The Boston Tea Party, right? It was American citizens standing up to the British militia to slow them down as they headed to Boston. So just keep in mind that protest has always been a part of the fabric of this country.
I understand that. But the flip side to that would be is that the one-sidedness is what folks on the right would point to, because they're talking about you got a guy like Donald Trump. Everybody, you know, my attitude with Jimmy Kimmel, listen, I love Jimmy Kimmel. I've been a guest on this show, been a guest on Stephen Colbert's show. You haven't been a guest on Jimmy Fallon's show. I think they're absolutely fabulous. I love them. I wish they stay on for a very, very long time to come, even though we hear about folks ultimately walking away from late night. My issue is that as comedians, you know, the one thing that we were able to point to, Kevin, religiously, is that no one was spared. Everyone got it. But one would argue, is particularly with folks on the right, that that hasn't been the case when it comes to Trump, which to me gives them fodder to come at folks the way that they do, because they're saying that it's so one-sided. What do you say to that?
Hold on. Hold on. Whoever is in power will take the knocks. And we know that's how it is. And so when all these people getting so sensitive, they need to stop, because when Democrats were in control, jokes were made about Democrats, things they did, whether it's the way that, you know, Biden got old in office. There were jokes made, lots of jokes by Kimmel, especially about Biden and his age and what was going on in the White House.
Well, maybe the thing that I made a mistake is bringing up jokes, Kev, because, again, I think that Donald Trump gets hurt and he deserves it. The flip side to it, however, is that a lot of times the comedians ain't joking. I mean, it's like, yo, you were laughing your ass off when they were talking about Biden or Kamala or Clinton, especially. They had a field day with Clinton in office and George W. I mean, they had a field
all
day.
Those
but
things,
when it comes to Donald Trump,
had a
it ain't necessarily
bit of truth.
Fun.
All those things had a little bit of truth to them, whether it was Clinton and his affairs. I mean, Clinton was skewered by late night because of his different affairs and women and how he treated. He was skewered, but they made it funny and you laughed along with him, right? He took it. He didn't every day, you know, find a way to answer those people. He just kept moving forward. He didn't address it every day. But all the things that were going on with Clinton, whether it was Whitewater, whether it was his illicit affairs, whether it's some kind of legislation, they were addressed and he took a lot of hits because of it. I mean, when the Jennifer Flowers stuff happened, it was all over the place. We know this. And they
and
gave
don't
lots
get started
of,
with Monica
and lots
Lewinsky.
Of people talked about. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Monica Lewinsky was the gift that kept on giving for late night comedians. Right. So this ain't different. So when Republicans come out and they're like, woe is me, you're hurting our feelings. It's like, stop, y'all. Stop. Go legislate. Stop crying about what people are saying, the comedians are saying in late night, because it's happened forever. It's gone on forever.
As you look at Hollywood right now, one would think that because of the climate that we're living in, because of who's in the White House and how you've got the FCC chairman talking about, you know, your people's license being, you know, licenses being in jeopardy and stuff like that because of public airwaves and all of this other stuff going on. In light of all of that, how fearful do you find Hollywood to be, if fearful at all? How fearful do you find them to be about the times that we're living in, considering who's in office and what level of retribution he may engage in to come after them at this particular moment in time?
I do think that there's a line between the people who have earned enough to speak freely and the people who are still on the come up. And even some of those people that have earned a lot, they are still, their voices are muted. They aren't as loud as they would be normally. But I will say this, that when Mark Ruffalo walked up to me at the Golden Globes and I asked him about, you know, the Marvel movie, the movie he's in this year, and he shifted quickly to what was going on in Minnesota, I let the man speak. Just like you say on your show, you like to let people come and speak their piece. And so that was the thing. It wasn't absolutely my job to interrupt or argue or do anything. It's my job to listen to what you're saying. And if you say something that's not true, I can give a rebuttal. But I let him speak. because what he had to say was important for him at that moment. And that's the problem. Everybody wants to fight and argue, and they want to say, you're wrong, I'm right. Ain't nobody right. Nobody is 100% right. And that's where the line has become blurred, and that's why there's a problem, because people want to watch and click on the arguments. The algorithm has been pushed towards the fight, not the solution, the fight. And that's the problem. Let's hear what the other side has to say. Let's talk about it. Let's have dignified correspondence. And I think that's the thing that is happening. What you're hearing from folks in Hollywood is this is their moment to say something. They are saying their piece, but they're trying to say it in a dignified manner or in a funny manner or an artful way. But they're not trying to, you know, cause an insurrection. They're not storming the Capitol. And art that has challenged the government has long been a part of Hollywood. You can go all the way back to the beginning of time. And, you know, I would say one of the most hurtful pieces of cinema in the history of America is The Birth of a Nation by D.W. Griffith and the way it painted Black folks. And that movie was a sensation. It was a sensation. People loved that movie. And it was one of the most harmful pieces of propaganda ever. So the cinema has always commented on the times, good and bad. You know, I mean, All the President's Men. There have been so many great movies.
You know, you bring up The Birth of a Nation. That was a really, really good call on your part, because obviously that was incredibly harmful. But the other thing that comes with that, though, is the changing times that we're living in. Because of the move away from the theaters, per se, streaming and the opportunities and the kind of things that, you know, the kind of things that Hollywood has expressed concerns about, you know, with the advent of AI and how that supposedly in the future will take away jobs and things of that nature. We've seen Warner Brothers and, you know, how you had Paramount and all of this stuff going on in terms of the merger and everything like that. So many things that we've looked at. We found ourselves asking, is Hollywood in danger of being silenced at some point in time or another, based on what we're witnessing, based on what we've seen the administration try to do in terms of pointing out who they've got problems with and exacting retribution, et cetera, et cetera? Is that a palpable fear that you find Hollywood is experiencing right now?
For the shifting landscape, and I think nothing says more about it than you being on this medium right here. YouTube is where a lot of voices are coming now to sound off that wouldn't have been available through traditional media. And as traditional media changes and shifts, you're seeing it. I mean, you know, once upon a time, they went from silent films to movies with sound, and everybody freaked out and they said, everything is changing. And then television came in and color came in. There will always be a move to shift the way that technology affects everything that we see and we hear. But the voices always find a place to speak their truth and speak with freedom. Look at some of the people who have now shifted over to this medium. You, Piers Morgan, Megyn Kelly, Joy Reid, all kinds of Tucker Carlson, all different voices saying different things, but they have found a place. And also we find that it's easier and cheaper than ever to make content. So Hollywood is making content in a cheaper and different way. We all have to shift. We all have to understand the landscape is changing, but we also have to adapt to what is new. New things will come at you all the time. What if you had sat your ass in the studio and never transitioned to something different? Where would you be?
Couldn't have said it better myself. One only Kevin Frazier, Entertainment Tonight. Appreciate you, big boy. Talk to you soon. By the way, Michael B., I knew he was winning Best Actor. I knew he was going to do it.
He deserved it. Was, and everybody has to take this into account, because look, I think that Jesse Buckley gave an incredible performance in Hamnet. I thought that Timothy Chalamet was good in Marty Supreme. But Michael's performance, to me, was the best performance of the year, because he played two people. He played two people, yeah. And he pulled it off so convincingly and beautifully that you believe there are two dudes named Smoke and Stack.
We go. Appreciate you, bro. Thanks a lot, my man.
Love you. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thanks again to Kevin Frazier encapsulating everything the way only he can. You heard what I had to say. You heard what he had to say. Just reminding you, Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM POTUS Radio. I will be back on. Hopefully, I'll be even better recovered from my whole dental procedure and all of that than I was today and certainly over this past weekend. I can't wait to get back at it because I got a lot to say. But until then, y'all have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Stephen A. signing off. Until next time, peace and love.